Welcome, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia on the 9th of August 2012. Great to have you aboard. We've got a really action-packed show lined up for you today. My name's Herewood Fenton and I do this show in order to counteract the absence of truth in our media and the absence of, journalists and research that has sufficient integrity to provide correct information to the general public about what is really going on matters that are extremely controversial, matters such as global climate, matters such as international politics, geopolitics, warfare, the agendas of the ruling powers and the ruling elites on this earth, the cover-ups of very important topics in our news, whether it be local or whether it be international. And I don't really think it's even important whether it's local or whether it's a small story or a huge story. What's important is to understand that there are forces at work that seek to suppress information or distort it, or in fact to completely project false information, and that is largely what the media is doing. That is actually what I would consider to be the main function of the media in our modern day society. And this was, of course, foreshadowed long ago, and it was discussed in detail by Edward Bernays in his famous book Propaganda, in which he said that the job of the media was actually to tell people what to think, and that, in fact, people can't be trusted and don't have the skills to get the information themselves, so we will tell them what to think and we will give them the expert advice that they can then run around and believe. Well, that, of course, is an elitist position. Now, whatever take you may have on that, whether you think, well, maybe there is some value in that. And indeed, at a certain point in time, maybe it was believed by many that was actually a valid way to proceed. And that was certainly the way it was couched in Edward Bernays's book. But, it's inevitable and it's to be expected that such an arrangement would lead to a concentration of power and an abuse of power when we allow small monopolies to control the flow of information. And that's what we have in the mainstream media today. We have a completely controlled information flow. But we have a counteraction to that. We have the free internet, the alternate news media popping up all over the world, people independently on a grassroots level, self-funded, setting up their own news agencies, their own blogs. And we are now, in the last 10 to 15 years, we've seen an amazing resurgence of the spirit of individual thinking, even at the same time as we see the propaganda machines going into overdrive and what appears to be the most dumbed down state that modern society has ever reached. It's like we've got two opposing forces. And all I know is that, I'm fighting for the side of truth and freedom, and I'm not going to be weighed down and completely obliterated by those forces. I will continue to do what I do. So in the next hour, I have a number of stories to cover with you, and I'll have George Georgis, our regular commentator, coming on to discuss some of his recent research shortly in the next section. And in the second hour of this show, I have a very important guest coming on. His name is Dr. Tim Ball, and he's joining us from Canada. Now, Dr. Tim Ball is a very well-respected scientist. He was a professor at the University of Winnipeg for many years. He's an environmentalist. I believe he's an expert in areas of geography and climatology. And he's been a very outspoken scientist in regard to climate science and questioning the dogmas of the IPCC and its various cohorts who would like us to believe that the debate is over and that we must simply accept the consensus, the argument by consensus. But of course, here is a scientist and he's got many published works. I can run through you a lot of the journals that he's been published in. Here is a real expert. Here is a real scientist. But then, of course, as we always see in these politicized debates, there are people accusing him of not really being an expert in the areas that he says he is. You have this always happens. You have you have arguments ad hominem coming from various sources to try and discredit people like Dr. Tim Ball who do not toe the line. So it's going to be a really excellent interview, really looking forward to that in the second hour. Now, I've got some Australian news to run through with you, and let me just get my Twitter feed back up here. I've got some Julian Assange news. Now, there really hasn't been much in relation to Julian Assange, and we honestly don't know what's going on. I assume he's still in the embassy there in London, in the Ecuadorian embassy, but he's been there for a long time now. It's gone very quiet. There's a couple of news stories that have just come out. One of Julian Assange's bodyguards has said that he is very concerned that Assange may face death. Mr. O'Reilly, Ciaran O'Reilly, is now a Londoner and appointed by Mr. Assange as one of two volunteer bodyguards. And it says here that, I'm just reading through the article here, quite a long one. Actually, it's a very, very long article. He does not have someone to react. He is someone who takes the initiative. And I'm just having a little trouble getting to the core of this article. They believe that the US government wants to charge Mr. Assange over WikiLeaks' release of masses of US military and diplomatic documents into the public domain. Okay, I think we'll leave this article. It's actually not very well written. It was from the ABC, and the headline, as we've often found with the media, the headline completely is discordant with the material inside the article. The article title was Julian Assange's bodyguard fears death, but there's actually nothing in there relevant to that. And that, I think, is just typical of the media, which doesn't really do a very good job of presenting information. I've got another article here in relation to Julian Assange. Most Australians back Julian Assange, according to a new poll. A majority of Australians believe the WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange would not receive a fair trial should he ever be extradited to the United States. The nationwide poll, conducted by UMR Research, also finds more than half do not believe he should be prosecuted for releasing thousands of diplomatic cables. Meanwhile, public opinion is split over whether the Gillard government is doing enough to help Julian Assange. So that is just an interesting point. It says here he is still seeking asylum in Ecuador, but if unsuccessful, he could find himself sent to Sweden. Officially, the US government says it has no plans to extradite him to the US, but a grand jury has been convened to probe the release by WikiLeaks of about 250,000 allegedly stolen diplomatic cables. Well, there's really, you know, this is all just sort of rehashes of what we already know. I think we have to conclude that there is no new news in regard to Julian Assange. We just don't know. He may have already secretly escaped the country. I mean, I hope he escapes. I think the most important thing of all to remember about this is to understand the travesty of due process and justice that he has been subjected to. And even if you don't like Julian Assange, even if you think, as some people do, that he's some kind of phony, that he's been propped up there by some, you know, backdoor CIA thing to be a front for something else, as people often do. And there's a lot of conspiracy theorizing that goes on. The fact that he's been vilified and falsely charged and held under extradition and all these ridiculous things, and he's never actually even been formally charged with anything, is the main thing to realize with the decay of human rights and the decay of the rule of law in a country like England. Now, there's been some new news in relation to Chappelle Corby, which I'll just briefly read out for you. Chappelle Corby may well be released. Now, Chappelle Corby, of course, the Australian convicted drug smuggler who has been held in a Bali jail for almost 8 years now. And, of course, you know, for those who don't know, I would say Google it, get the information. Look at Chappelle Corby. It's spelled S-C-H-A-P-E-L-L-E, Corby, C-O-R-B-Y. Look at the Expendable Project. There has been a massive government cover-up within Australia to cover up the information that would have exonerated her. And why is this important? Why are we talking about simply the case of one individual? Because A, we believe she was not guilty. B, we believe that the real guilty parties are part of a giant network of drug trafficking that has been going on in Australia for decades, and that those who try to expose it are crushed and silenced, and the official government representatives continue to say that this does not exist, despite various police having been convicted. We know that there is a network of drug trafficking that uses airports and passengers as drug mules. Chappelle has been locked up since 2004 after having been convicted of being carrying drugs into Bali in a boogie board bag. And the type of drugs we're talking about here is actually marijuana, which of course is not a substance which is ever trafficked into Indonesia, because they make far more there than they do here, and it's far stronger, far better quality than the marijuana that is made locally in Australia, and the price in Australia is about 10 times the price. And that's a conservative estimate, at least 10 times the price. If you had 4 kilograms of marijuana, you would not take it from Australia to Indonesia. Anyway, the good news is Chappelle Corby may well be released very soon. And I personally believe that that is largely due to the work of people like the Expendable Project and this website, who have been relentlessly exposing the corruption and the lies within our government that had led to her conviction and that has prevented her from having a successful appeal, because the Indonesian government looks to our media and our government and sees that they have basically condemned her, and they say, well, her case has no merit because she's always protested her innocence. So what I have to say is simply that she is quite likely to be eligible for parole in a few weeks, and we're waiting to get the final confirmation on that. And I will be looking forward to interviewing some of her family members who have been on this show before, and we'll get all of the information on that for you as soon as it comes to hand. Now, just briefly, there's another study that has recently been released in relation to fluoride. And we may discuss this a little more in the next segment after we go to break. But I've got an article here from the New American, a review of some 24 studies by Harvard University researchers this month in a peer-reviewed federal journal suggests that fluoride added into water supplies significantly decreases the IQ of children, leading to renewed calls by activists to end the practice of water fluoridation. So we will be bringing that story to you in more depth after the ad break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It is really excellent to be talking to you today. I will be right back after these few ads. Please stay with us. Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Herewood Fenton. And I would like to welcome to the studio today, behind the man behind the curtain. For those who aren't in the studio, that probably won't make a lot of sense, but he's hidden behind a screen. I cannot see him, but he's my guest today, George Georgis. Welcome back to Truth News Radio.
Thank you, Harold, once again. Thanks a lot for being here.
It is a great honour, as always, George, to have you with us. And today you're going to be running through some of your recent hardcore penetrating research into a number of not well-known topics. We're going to be looking at the guar gum conspiracy, as you've uncovered. Yep. It. We're going to be looking at the great oil transport fraud being perpetrated. Yes. On Americans, where they're moving oil by train.
Yes.
Across the country. And we may be looking at the federal elections. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to hand it over to you, George, and you can blow our minds with your latest discoveries.
All right, well, might cover a few little topics here. During the week, I encountered a story concerning guar gum, which is very little known. And what tripped me onto that was I was watching the commodity prices, and this thing has gone up in recent times like three times. So it's a 300% gain in a short space of time. So there's a bit of a shortage of a product called guar gum, which is it's a derivative from a bean. Now, the major supplier of guar gum is India. In 2007, and nothing to the contrary has been released since, there was some analysis of the product coming from India and some very dangerous and banned pesticides in the dioxin group were found in the product itself. They denied that the product contained this or that these dangerous pesticides are still being used in India. However, the research was there and the product is still being sold. It's a food additive. It's used to prevent oil from aggregating. You'll find it in your sauces that you buy, maybe your Thousand Island dressing or your ranch dressing or these lighter French dressings that you might find, where the oil remains in suspension. It doesn't join in. It's used in other products as well as a thickening agent. It's used in certain areas of meat processing. So it's in our food everywhere. So effectively they're using, what concerns me is they're using banned, not dangerous, but banned pesticides. They've been found. No one will comment. I tried to get a call through to someone to make a comment from the Indian side of things, and sure, I couldn't get anyone to make a comment to them. So if we search the net, we'll find some investigative laboratory work done in 2007, and as far as I'm concerned, that still remains, and guar gum, which is everywhere, is a bit of a problem. The other interesting thing I found during the week, I was chasing markets and watching things that happened. Harked back to the week or so before the 9/11 disaster in the United States, where some interesting activity took place in share trading in America concerning airlines. I'll leave that to our listeners to research, but it's a very interesting proposition. Something else happened which was parallel to that and reminded me of that situation. Now, about 2005 in the United States, the rail industry is starting to retract. We've got photographs of thousands of diesel locos tied up or put into what they call stabling yards and not being used. A lot of money is involved with these. So the rail industry is starting to fall down. Warren Buffett, who's not a silly man by any means, starts to buy up the rail industry in America. So we had the merging of the Atchison, Topeka and the Santa Fe line brought in with the Burlington Northern Group. So we had a new group coming together, owned by Berkshire Hathaway, called the Burlington Northern Santa Fe line. It was effectively still stable there, the second largest capacity behind Union Pacific in the US. Now, the US has a massive, massive oil field called the Bakken. There's a Bakken 1 and Bakken 2 that covers a significant area of North America. Above that, there's an area called the Canadian Oil Sands Fields. Now, there was a proposal put forward to build or to complete a pipeline called the Keystone XL. Now, this is the logical way that where oil is moved. Crude oil is moved through pipeline. That's the way it's done. Now, up to 2010 and 2011 brought the total ownership of BNSF, Burlington Northern Santa Fe, into the Berkshire Hathaway umbrella. So they totally own it, 100% own this, the second largest freight potential freight carrier in the United States. So 1 year ago, I think 14th of August last year, Warren Buffett writes a story for the New York Times titled Stop Coddling the Rich. Obama jumps onto this rather interesting little socialistic tryst, and they have a chat on the telephone. The end result is 3 weeks later, we have introduced in America a piece of legislation called the Buffett Rule, where the rich, who are anyone who's earning more than $1 million a year in the US, should pay a minimum of 30% tax guaranteed. So the Buffett Rule comes in. Now, if you're up there with the large earners, these local legislative exercises don't affect you that much. That's another issue, though.
Sure.
Now, so, and some 3 to 4 months after that, we see that the Keystone XL project has been killed off by the Obama administration. Now, a logical way of moving oil. Now, how is all this oil going to be moved? And bearing in mind we need to move perhaps 1-2 million barrels a day at least. So the only way left to move it, and this ties in with an argument concerning the pipeline going over an aquifer in Nebraska. So the local environmental issues came to the fore there, and so the pipeline was canned. Now, the oil, all this crude oil, is going to be moved by rail. Highly expensive, a waste of energy, very inefficient, but that's how it will be. So they moved some 600,000 barrels of oil. Now, bear in mind that one rail truck will carry only about 900 barrels of oil. So we're talking for 900,000 barrels were moved, so there's 1,000 rail trucks being moved. So this is a very wasteful and inefficient way of moving crude oil, but that's currently locked in.
It seems also, inefficient, dangerous.
Yes.
Because, I mean, obviously the risks of a train derailment are probably far greater than the risk of a pipeline bursting.
Yep.
And, the consequences of that, again, would be quite catastrophic. Imagine a giant freight train with tankers of oil, having some explosion. I mean, it would just be incredible, wouldn't it?
You're pulling some 40,000 tonnes. Apart from the infrastructure damage, it's a waste of energy to run these diesels. It's a very inefficient. I think that after this, we're assuming that Obama will be returned. Now, after this, in, say, 6 years from now, I think that that'll be reversed back to the pipeline. But in the meantime, the point I was trying to express there was that people should have a look at the share trades that took place about that time, and it's rather interesting. Now, another interesting point concerning Burlington Northern is, in the US, as in Australia and other countries, it's logical, and they do this, to build the power station over the top of the coal mines. So the coal coming up from below goes into the power station, and it's cheaper to send the electricity down the line than to go trucking coal to a station. So, but of course, in America, we found another convenient situation where there was too much pollutant being caused by certain coal where the power stations had been built over these mines. So we've got a ridiculous situation occurring in the US and Australia where you've got coal being transported from other areas to these power stations built over coal mines because some argument is put forward as to the level of pollution being drawn out from the coal underneath those power stations. Now, it's interesting.
And so they actually say we're going to bring coal from somewhere else.
Yeah. But the interesting point there also is, and I'll...
I think we're going to have to address that after the ads, George.
Not a problem.
But that's a very, very relevant point to compare what you're saying there with you know, these practices that are incompetent, stupid and inefficient. The world is being drowned by incompetence. We'll be back right after the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Please stay with us. Welcome back. You're tuned to Truth News. You can find Truth News on the web at www.truthnews.com.au, and you can also call us if you'd like to join the conversation. We are open. Lines are open. You can call us on 1300 153 372. That's an Australian only number. 1300 153 372. Sorry, I'll read that again. 1300 153 372. If you're calling from Australia, it's a local call cost anywhere in Australia. Please give us a ring. If you're calling from the US, you can call us on 512-646-1984. And my guest today is the illustrious George Georges, who's here with us till the end of the hour. And then, of course, I'm getting Dr. Tim Ball on in the second hour, which is going to be a really high-powered, really important interview, one of the most key interviews that we will, you know, have done on this show, because we'll be talking to someone who's highly expert in the subject of climate and climatology, climate stratigraphy, a lot of different aspects there. Now, George, I'll get you to return to where you were left off there. You were getting into the subject about coal. We were talking first about the movements of oil in the United States, this ridiculous plan to move oil by train. You know, and apart from all of the stupidities of it, it's going to destroy the main purpose of what a train network is for, which is moving people. You know, trains are not really, you know, like the value of trains is for human transport. It's a nice way of getting around. Of course, this will destroy all that. And, of course, it'll destroy people's quality of life with the noise pollution effects. And I know that from living near a freight line here where I live. Freight trains are horrendously loud. They have screechy wheels. They're very heavy, so the wheels screech as they go down the train line. I get woken up every night by the freight train line just going about, you know, a kilometre away from where I live. It's that loud, a kilometre away, and it's still really loud. But, George, let's get back to coal. You're talking about how they're moving coal around the country, and they've got power stations sitting on coal mines, but they're not allowed to get the coal out of the ground. Tell us all about it.
All right. One of the other contracts that Burlington Northern Santa Fe, which is the Berkshire Hathaway wholly owned subsidiary, has is that they're moving now enough coal to these power stations by rail, supplying the United States with some 10% of its total energy needs. Enormous amounts. Freight trains are good for taking trucks off roads. There's a lot of argument there. Trucks need to be used differently. Interstate trucking and such, if it can be avoided by rail, is very good. So there's a balance there. But when you're moving, we're trying to move 1 million, 2 million barrels of oil a day and all this coal by train, you have to question what's actually taking place here. Around the world, they use pipelines. Through the Caspian Sea, through Afghanistan, there were three pipelines going long distances. Throughout the world, they use pipelines, but not in America, and not at the moment. The only country, as far as I'm aware, where there is a pipeline possible where freight trains are going to be used, and they are being used. So they're attempting at the moment to move as much as 1 million barrels a day, but that's really quite a ridiculous proposition. So we've got that situation there. Now, I don't know. Again, I keep harking back to share trades that signal things and what's actually happening there. They are signals. We saw it at 9/11. We saw it here with Burlington Northern, Santa Fe. We see a lot of situations where a downed industry, as freight trains, are being brought in with a large contract. And one has to question these things. One has to question administrations that have tie-ins with merchant banks, perhaps, and tie-ins with certain major companies. So it is a little bit disturbing. The other, what I did during the week is I interviewed one of the senior managers of one of the world's major food, fast food chains. And they're going to be introducing, they've test run, and they're going to be introducing a low price food. So they've got their larger priced items on their menu, but the smaller items will be running through because this major food chain, who are seriously not backwards as far as their economic interpretation of this planet is concerned, have determined that the recession really hasn't hit yet and there is a market for this line of food. So they're going to be starting to introduce that. So that's interesting too from these people. A lot of media focus has come about indicating that we survived the recession and we survived the global financial crisis, and aren't we lucky and we weren't too badly hit. Well, folks, we don't seem to think that we've actually reached it yet. So whatever thinking we had there as far as protecting ourselves are concerned, I think is a good issue. If you've got debts, then you should try and clear those, but I'm not giving any advice. So we really need to contract backwards and to be aware that things can change dramatically in an economy without being fully aware of it. Also during the week, I noticed a statement by one of the executives of the Reserve Bank here in Australia, a central bank, where he was saying that the retail banks, they just refer to them as the banks, but it's the retail banks that we all find for our checking accounts and such. We're lucky in Australia because the banks here didn't suffer as much through the allegedly concluded global financial crisis, and there weren't any major borrowings, and the government didn't have to bail out people. I broke a story a year and a half ago concerning funds lent to the retail banks in Australia through the Fed. Bernanke dodged a question asked at one of the hearings concerning whether the Fed was lending money to foreign banks. It was an interesting little piece about that on YouTube and his interview there. But it contradicted what I had found, and although that particular story, when I tried to place it with major newspapers here in Australia, was denounced as "George, what are you drinking now?" Within 3 weeks, that story was actually sanitised and run in major press here in Australia. So it's not right to cover situations. And we're harking back to propaganda with Bernays and even aspects of 1984 that I was discussing with Herowood last night. But really, I think information should be out there, and it's not reasonable to say that people can't handle the truth, and besides, they're not entitled to it. So we're harking back to some odd situations there.
George, can I just briefly, before we get to the end of this segment, I just want to return to this Gua Gum story that you were talking about before, because
sure.
All that you just said there was awesome. Unfortunately, I'm trying to do three different things at once,
yeah,
as usual on this show, and I haven't been able to respond because I'm trying to set up the next interview, having a bit of trouble getting the Skype response from my next guest.
Yeah.
But I just want to briefly mention that I've got an article here that actually links Gua Gum to the coal seam gas industry and fracking. Now, have you come across this?
No, I haven't found the connection there.
Well, this is very interesting. Let me just read this out to you. A typical fracking job requires about 20,000 pounds of Gua Gum. It's actually an ingredient that is used in fracking. So this technique that they're using to get gas out of coal seams uses this same substance that is used to make ice cream, right?
Yeah.
And What is very interesting about that is that, you know, if there is this pesticide problem, right, with Goor Gum, then that means that stuff is going into the groundwater because that is actually being used as a chemical agent to get gas out of coal seams. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So it's got an industrial use as well as the... I focused on the pesticide aspect and went down the path of the food additives, which caught my attention there. But now that you've mentioned that, I have heard that that is used. It has an industrial industrial application as well. And certainly, just as you've indicated there, there is potential for...
And another consequence of that will be that the cost of Goor Gum is going to astronomically increase because of the huge demand that this industry is putting on it. There's going to be a shortage of supply, which means that anything that uses it is going to, you know, your ice cream, George, is going to get more expensive.
Well, it's gone up three times, which is caught my eyes. I was checking commodity movements during the week. I saw that this thing has just shot up three times. And over time, but there's quite a linear move there with that. The other interesting point, as I was looking at commodities, the U.S. Geological Survey has indicated that the world's going to be out of silver within 5 to 8 years, and so that'll cause a little bit of movement in the silver market, perhaps. But I don't. There's an assumption. You can't say that a commodity is going to be gone. Not every rock has been turned. We've been through peak oil in the past. We now realise that was total nonsense. And there are other aspects at play there. So it's not a reasonable situation to say that silver will be gone. What that does is it causes the price of the commodity to rise and then to retract back. So it's not good statements from government bodies to be making those sort of remarks. So we see these sort of things coming out now more blatantly from governments, as we saw with the Office of the Reserve Bank here in Australia and the US Geological Survey statements on silver and banks here in Australia. We're getting more blatant comments that are unsupported.
George, I'm going to have to cut you off, unfortunately, my friend.
Story of my life, unfortunately.
You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Stay with us. In the next hour, we have an interview with scientist and climatologist Tim Ball from Canada. A really, really important interview. Don't go away.